Hi, I'm Natalie Dale, and welcome to GDOT's podcast, Ahead of the Curve. It is the summer, and many of us have been hitting the road for those summer vacations. But we don't just travel by car during the summer. This is one of those great times to get out and about, whether it's on a bike or by foot. We have some great department guests today to talk about pedestrian safety, what we're doing at GDOT to enhance pedestrian safety, not just in your community, but statewide. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Walking is great for your health, but pedestrian deaths are surging in Georgia. Last year, 235 people were killed while on foot, a 40% increase in just 2 years. Both drivers and walkers share the responsibility for pedestrian safety. Walkers, stay alert and cross where you can be seen by oncoming traffic. Drivers should watch for pedestrians and slow down. 9 out of 10 people die when hit at 40 miles an hour. Georgia DOT reminds you to see and be seen.
All right, welcome back. We have two incredible guests today, one who's been with us before, one who is brand new and so excited. So we are joined today by Ron Knezovich, State Safety Engineer Supervisor, which, Ron, I feel like your title is harder to say than your last name, and I will stand beside that, or by it, behind it, wherever I'm standing, as a pedestrian, which is what we're covering today. So there you go. We also have Connor Booth here, who is the State Pedestrian Bicycle Engineer. Welcome, both of you. Ron, nice to have you back. Connor, welcome to the hot seat.
Thank you.
Thanks, Natalie.
Well, I want to get to know y'all a little bit. Ron, of course, you've been here before, but it's been a second. New role, you've changed, things have happened. You know, give us a little highlight of where you've been and what are you up to?
Sure. So, like I said last time, a lot of my background is in data science and traffic safety. By my runner and triathlete, and I bring that pedestrian and bicycle passion I have with that data science, and now apply it to my role as the State Safety Engineering Supervisor. With that, you know, pedestrian and bicycle safety is such a key component. Pedestrian and bicycle fatalities represent about 20% of our roadway fatalities, and it's really a part of every safety decision we have to make.
Connor, welcome. Are you excited to be here?
I am, yes. Thank you for having me.
We don't know you. Who are you?
So I am Connor Booth. I'm the State Pedestrian Bicycle Engineer here at GDOT.
And how did you get to us? How did you, you know, it's a lot of people think we're a very car-centric agency, but we have so much passion in this building, I will say, for pedestrians, for bicycles. And so, you know, just with y'all at the helm in this room, what brought you to GDOT? What made you want to get involved here?
Yeah, so a little background of how I got here. So I did go to Georgia Tech, go Jackets. And as part of my time at Georgia Tech, you know, I've always been a city lover. Love living in cities, love the vibrancy of cities. So I actually had the opportunity to study abroad in Tokyo while I was at Georgia Tech. And that really got me interested specifically in walkability and livability, just experiencing, you know, the vibrant walkable streets as well as the amazing transit system in Tokyo.
What was your sort of mind-blown, most unique experience in Tokyo in looking at their transportation system? Something that you were like, oh man, that's really incredible. That should translate to what we have here.
So obviously, I have to mention the subway system. You know, it's spectacular, and I highly doubt we'll ever have anything quite that elaborate here in Atlanta, but we're a much smaller city. But one of the things that really surprised me while I was there was just they had all these very walkable, pedestrian-only streets, you know, market streets, where you could tell there are just lots of small businesses, and each little business had its own character that, you know, each person who lived on the street had been able to add their own little touches to really create a neighborhood.
So, for example, I live in Smyrna, Georgia, and every Sunday we have like an artist market, and they close out Smyrna Market Village, and the village is filled with different booths and different vendors and things. So we're talking like that, but every day, all day, every day.
And it's wonderful is when you're on foot, you can appreciate all the little details and all the vibrancy of the street.
Well, it's great to have you both. We've got a lot of ground to cover today, so let's jump in. But we need to start from the beginning, which is where I do like to start. So, Ron, act as if I have just landed on this planet and I have no idea what a pedestrian is. When we say pedestrian, who are we talking about?
Well, everyone is a pedestrian. You're probably a pedestrian at some point today. I'm a pedestrian at some point.
We're pedestrians right now.
We are not in a motor vehicle, so we are pedestrians. But what if I was in a motor vehicle, but then I got out of my motor vehicle?
Then you're a pedestrian as well. If you're walking on or near our roadway system, you're a pedestrian. That's the kind of the key point of it. Pedestrian transportation accommodates all ages and abilities, including wheelchair travel as well. So people are pedestrians from pretty much the day they're born and they're in a wheelchair or being held as by their parents to the nearly the day they die.
That's why I say that a lot, and a lot of people cringe. But, I mean, it's true in some aspects. The transportation system is something that is uniquely used by everyone, whether you kind of want to or not. Like, you don't have to buy into it. You're using it because you exist, and you have to get from point A to point B. I would venture to say there's not too many people who can get through a day without using the transportation system in some form or fashion, and that's even like walking on the sidewalk to get the mail. Like, that's, you're a pedestrian. You're in your car. But you use the transportation system cradle to the grave, hospital to the grave. And so we have a high level of exposure as an agency, so of course we have a lot of users that we have to address. So that's what y'all are doing, is addressing a really large population of users who are using our system on a daily basis. And it's not just cars that we function here at GDOT. It's the whole transportation system. So Ron, talk about, I know that our ultimate goal is to make a safer transportation system for all, and in the case of this conversation today, pedestrian safety. It's not just because we don't want fatalities. Talk about the economic vitality that pedestrian safety brings to communities big and small.
So, you know, pedestrian safety has a lot of those other benefits, including economic vitality, similar to the benefits Connor enjoyed in Tokyo. There's communities that can be brought together with those walkable trips that can be made. Less congestion on the road, the more people we get out and walking in those small, dense, urban, or small rural town environments as well. There's also benefits outside of just economic vitality. You have public health, making sure we're not just sitting in our desks all day or just walking out to get to get our mail, making sure we're moving as we live rather than that typical 9-to-5 desk job in our cars going back and forth. So as we incorporate pedestrian safety into our initiatives, it's really about livability as well.
So walk us through some basic pedestrian accommodations we have in infrastructure, whether they are like really basic, like a crosswalk, or on the more innovative side, like something I don't know about because it's in your brain. Tell me.
Interesting. Connor, you think of the really unique ones to come up with. I'll start with the basics. Sidewalks are, you know, the classic pedestrian infrastructure. We have pedestrian bridges in some cases, crossing interstates often. We have crosswalks at mid-block as well as crosswalks at traffic signals. Those crosswalks at mid-block, they can be warning devices such as rapid flashing beacons or those flashing crosswalks that you'll see, or pedestrian hybrid beacons, which are signalized pedestrian crossings at those mid-blocks. Connor, any funky ones you can think of?
Nothing too funky. I think you pretty much covered it. Other than I know we're starting to put in more pedestrian scrambles these days, where essentially pedestrians get their own dedicated phase at the intersection and can cross.
Pedestrian scramble sounds like a breakfast item. So explain that a little more.
Yes, so this is where at a traffic signal, essentially we have pedestrians get their own dedicated time to cross the street. So while the pedestrian scramble is going, no vehicles can go for the intersections, and pedestrians can actually cross diagonally. So this is something we're doing both to improve pedestrian safety because there's no vehicles going for the intersection. It also helps a lot in these dense urban environments where a lot of people are trying to cross diagonally.
Oh, so fabulous. I do know what you're talking about now, and now I know what it's called. So there we go. We're all about education here at this podcast. Speaking of education, See and Be Seen, big initiative that we have at GDOT, and that is really bringing the safety messaging specifically to pedestrians, specifically to those in the bicycle community who are using the roadway outside of a car. Also important educational information for motorists to know. So See and Be Seen, give us just the brief rundown of See and Be Seen and what the purpose of that educational initiative is.
Well, the crux of the CMBC initiative is because about 80% of our pedestrian fatalities happen at night. This initiative is for educating people to know about this, so drivers are more aware at night, pedestrians are more aware that, well, drivers might not be able to see them when they're walking at night. Speeds are also higher on the road when drivers are able to drive in free flow. But also to talk about the initiatives we're doing at GDOT to try and increase pedestrian visibility in those nighttime conditions. That can include crosswalk lighting. We're really trying to incorporate lighting at all of our mid-block crosswalks and pedestrian-only lighting projects as well.
And just because we have an educational component for specifically for pedestrians at night, CNBC bringing that attention to them, we don't want motorists to think that they're not responsible here. You know, there is a very important part of driving that's a different educational campaign where we talk to motorists about making sure that they, no matter what hour of the day, that they're keeping attention on the wheel, behind the wheel, and aware of what's going on the road. And that includes where there are pedestrians in the system.
Exactly. That's why that CNCB campaign falls under our Drive Alert, Arrive Alive campaign, because it's just a critical part of it, too.
Shared responsibility with both motorists, bicyclists, pedestrians. It takes a lot. So today we're going to talk a lot about pedestrian safety, but we want to say probably from the onset that doesn't mean that no one else on the road bears responsibility for what's happening to pedestrians. We're just going to have that conversation today specifically about pedestrians, bicyclists. That doesn't mean the motorists are off the hook. We're going to talk to y'all later. When we talk about pedestrians, I think we think just big city, big moving, just things like scrambles with like a lot of population needing to cross at once. But that's not the reality statewide. And as a statewide organization, we have to look at what communities throughout the state need in regards to pedestrian accommodation. So let's drill down to some of these rural areas. I read on the internet, so I just want to put a little asterisk out there that this may or may not be true, but the internet said it, so we're going to roll with it, that about 3/4 of the cities in Georgia have less than 5,000 population. We have over 500 and something cities, and the vast majority of that, we'll just say that, fall in this 5,000 and under population. So this is not the pedestrian scramble New York, Atlanta downtown pedestrian scenario. These are different things that we're dealing with statewide. Talk to me about how we address pedestrian needs in those type of communities.
Well, one thing we're doing that's really critical in those communities is our rural active transportation plan. This really has a focus in those under 5,000 communities that are outside of metropolitan planning organizations or outside of urbanized areas. That's because there's not that many people in those communities. Typically, there's, we'll say, a mayor that's also has another full-time job. They don't typically have a transportation planner that can do really innovative plans for that small community. So our rural active transportation plan takes into account a variety of different factors related to the need for those pedestrian facilities, amount of people that would bike in those areas or walk in those areas, as well as the safety in those areas too. Kind of giving us a prioritization matrix and looking to program projects to improve pedestrian safety, economic vitality, and of course, livability in general in those communities.
Connor, when y'all are sort of gathering information in these communities about the pedestrian needs, how does community feedback, how do you sort of identify the community feedback? How does it get to the department? How does it shape the plan?
Yeah, so one of the critical components of the Rural Active Transportation Plan has been reaching out to all these communities. So fortunately, a lot of these communities have, you know, city festivals or, you know, other public events that we're able to table at. We've also been to Go Georgia puts on an annual Bike Walk Live Summit every year, so we've managed to get a lot of feedback on that. And we've even been going to big group rides, right, the bike ride across Georgia, to get the feedback from people who are really using the state's bike routes.
So how does someone even bike across Georgia? I don't even know how to bike across my own community.
Yes, so here at GDOT, we have what's called the State Bike Route System, where we have designated highways throughout the state that are marked as routes for biking. So for bike touring long distances, you know, you think your guys, you know, in spandex who go out and ride long distances on the weekends. One of the challenges, though, is that we created that bike route map back in 1998 with our original bicycle and pedestrian plan, and it hasn't really been updated since then. So many of those roads have been widened, you know, they've had improvements for vehicles on them, but they're no longer friendly for bicyclists. So actually one of the big initiatives of the Rural Active Transportation Plan is to update that route map and to pick routes that are more friendly for bicyclists for our state bike routes.
Yeah, or see what we can do to those existing routes to try to accommodate bicyclists as well.
So some of the key projects and initiatives that, y'all are currently working on with that plan is things like island connectivity. I don't even know what islands we're connecting, because I'm stuck here in Metro Atlanta, and that is the only thing I think about. Not really, but for most of the state, if you're in the North Georgia Mountains, you don't even know what island connectivity is. You don't even know what the options are. If we all take vacations in South Georgia, or I would like to take more vacations in South Georgia, but while I'm there, if I can just bike from island to island, it blows my mind, but I don't even know what blows my mind because I don't even know about it.
Well, not
Tell
quite.
Tell me about it.
We have four islands that are really the focus here. We have Tybee, Jekyll Island, Skidaway, and St. Simon's Island. There is only one way in and one way out to those islands. So if those routes aren't bikeable, well, then people don't want to bike there. So our initiative is here to see how can we reconfigure that road, existing roadway, to accommodate bicycle facilities. Sometimes that just means a nice bikeable shoulder with a rumble strip as a buffer. Of course, making sure that bicyclists can enter and exit through that rumble strip. And sometimes that can be a full shared use path. But really the crux of that is let's allow people to have their summer fun on the beach and use a bike to get to those islands.
Is there a challenge when you are in an area like this that doesn't have the connectivity? When you are creating connectivity in an area where motorists are not used to bicyclists having connectivity, what is the challenge of sort of educating motorists that this is coming, that they're going to, that ideally there would be more of a bike community sharing the road with them in an area that they're not used to it?
Yeah, so it's almost like building a new road unto itself. It's just a new form of transportation entering that type of facility. Sometimes even, unfortunately, crashes can go up when we design these new facilities, but that's because so much more new bike traffic comes in. So it's like almost a new alignment.
Okay, so y'all are working on the biking in rural communities, biking on the islands, but we're also working on pedestrian accommodations in, obviously, these urban communities, suburban communities. How do those differ? How does working on those different sort of areas work?
So Connor, I'll turn that over to you to kind of hint at our next plan.
Sure. So in addition to the rural active transportation plan, we're gearing up to prepare an urban active transportation plan as well. And yet one of the reasons that we really now want to look at the urban areas is that 92% of our pedestrian crashes are happening in urban areas. Particularly, we're concerned about a lot of our state routes are these high-speed, high-volume arterials that have a lot of commercial activity on them, or even high-density residential we're starting to see increasingly. So when we have these uses that draw pedestrians, we end up with pedestrians in these environments where there are a lot of vehicles going at high speeds. So that's one big thing that we're trying to address to make those corridors safer. We also, Ron's alluded to looking at mid-block crossings, so making sure that when we have long distances between signals, that people are able to cross safely mid-block, as well as bus stops is another big thing we're looking at. You know, whenever someone takes a bus, they're most likely going to have to cross the street at least once, either getting to the bus or coming back from taking the bus. So making sure that we facilitate that safely is critical as well.
So Ron, when you're looking at pedestrian safety planning and you're looking at something like a corridor, specifically what comes to mind is a corridor like Buford Highway, where you have so many pedestrian users, you've got so many bus stops along that route, and of course we want to be transit friendly. We want to collaborate with our transit partners to make sure that if we can't have rail in that corridor and bus is the transit option, that we are that we are sort of combining our needs with the needs of the transit operator in the corridor. How do we collaborate with someone like MARTA in a situation like that?
We actually meet monthly with MARTA in particular, but are looking to meet more frequently with all the transit agencies in Georgia because those bus stops are such a critical concern for us. We want to make sure there's safe access to get to those bus stops. They're part of the transportation system too, and those bus stops, they're movable. So we can pick up a bus stop and move it somewhere else where it's a safer spot where we can put some sort of crossing to allow pedestrians to access that type of facility. So it's really a give and take of, you know, MARTA's got their own type of stakeholder interests of where that bus stop should be placed. You know, maybe they don't want their bus to be too close to a signal, so we need to look for a mid-block crossing, a place where it's closer to the facilities they're trying to pick people up at. And we're trying to look at what type of places is most engineering accommodating to install that mid-block crossing. So it's a little bit of a balancing act and a great collaboration that we have with them right now.
So in these corridor studies, y'all are really focusing on, if with your example of bus stops, where people are naturally crossing the road, where there may not be pedestrian accommodations right now. How, when y'all do a corridor study, kind of walk me through what y'all look at to identify where needs need to be met.
So it's interesting. Historically, we've done corridor studies for these initiatives, but we've taken a step back and looked at the bigger picture specifically for bus stops. So instead of looking at it from corridor by corridor, we're actually taking a look at the systemic or network level system. So we're taking all of our bus stops and seeing, are they near an existing crossing? How close are they to an existing crossing? Can we move that bus stop to an existing crossing? And if we can't, can we put a mid-block crossing there? What type of mid-block crossing should go there? So, you know, it's kind of a take a step back and look at this from a network level. But of course, we have thousands of bus stops in Georgia. It's really hard to program mid-block crossings at all of these, so we have to prioritize them. We want to leverage that crash data for that prioritization, but we also want to use other risk factors as well. Those risk factors can be ridership at the bus stop, lane number on the road, meaning longer distances to cross. There tend to be more pedestrian crashes. Median presence tends to have less pedestrian crashes. And then some factors like the social vulnerability index, which comes from the CDC. This is a really interesting demographic data set that tells us where people are more likely to not have a car. Originally, this index was used to allow government to prioritize resources during natural disasters. We found, well, it's really highly correlated to pedestrian crashes. So now we're using that as one of our risk factors in this prioritization process.
A challenge that y'all might have is when you're looking at pedestrian safety and you're solving problems for the pedestrian road-using community, that you don't want to then create a different or new problem for a different road user like a motorist. So how do you balance solving the problems that your office solves, that y'all are charged with solving, without then creating a problem for a different road user?
Sure. So some of the ways we do is with our signal operations group, a lot of their performance metrics are tied towards operations and reducing delay on the road. We really just try to balance the crosswalks that we're installing, seeing if we can minimize delay, of course, but also accommodating that pedestrian safety where needed. And there's trade-offs with this. Sometimes pedestrian safety needs to be prioritized in those urbanized contexts, but sometimes maybe we can have a mid-block crossing that's a little farther away from the signals, but we install things such as, I don't know, funneling devices like bushes so people actually use the mid-block crossing rather than crossing outside of a crosswalk.
Well, and there's so much coordination. Y'all don't work in a silo. I mean, we all work with different offices. We all work together. So I do not envy the challenges that y'all have with what y'all are dealing with. Other types of pedestrian road users are students. And, you know, in the summer, we don't deal with that as much. But we also have school zones throughout the state that have pedestrians. And we want to encourage those children to walk to school, to bike to school. We have programs for that that encourage communities to have active, safe groups where families are walking together, kids are biking together. You know, we have programs for that. So how do we identify and maintain safety within school zones, some of which are on high-speed, busy state routes?
Yes, yeah, so we have at the department the Safe Routes to School program, which is dedicated to trying to make it safe for kids to walk and bike to school. So there's an infrastructure component of this where we do try to install infrastructure, sidewalks, mid-block crossings, you know, things that we can do to make it safer for kids to walk and bike to school. But then we also have an educational component of it. So this is where we'll have, you know, classroom materials like our Keep Georgia Safe materials for teachers to teach kids how to, you know, cross the street safely, you know, making sure to look both ways and to follow the signal, as well as biking safely as well. But one of my favorite initiatives that we have with our Safe Routes to School are our walking and biking buses. So this is where parents will organize, basically getting a group of kids together to walk or bike to school, depending on how far it is, and they'll go as a big group. And then this creates a safety in numbers effect where they're able to get a bunch of kids walking and biking to school. You know, it's something really exciting for them that they really enjoy and look forward to, and really gets them in that habit of, you know, getting to school a different way and getting a little bit of exercise in the morning.
And we get to pass out our reflective CNBC material to those school students whenever we go on those trips. Yes.
Their favorite part, of course. They love getting the goodies.
Me too. I mean, you don't have to be a kid to like getting some good swag from the department. As a parent, I will say one thing that really gives me anxiety around school zones is speed. You know what? As a parent, one of the things that gives me anxiety anywhere on our roads is speed. However, for the purpose of this conversation, when we're talking about school zones, the way that people speed through school zones is you just have to wonder what's going on in their mind. What is the strategy for dealing with that? And tell me, make me feel better. Tell me y'all are dealing with that.
So one thing we're working on is a statewide speed management plan. We're in the early stages of this. But a really key aspect of this is looking at things from a more granular context level. You know, we talked about both urban and rural contexts. Well, there's actually seven of them that we're using in this. And depending on the driveway density and signal density, we have different target speeds that we want to try to get drivers or target drivers to drive at. Traditional design approaches have been about trying to make a conservative speed so drivers can drive faster and be safe. But nowadays, we're looking at targeting certain speeds on roadways to ensure people are driving how we want them to drive in that specific context. So if it's a school in a dense urban environment in particular, you know, we want to make sure that we're targeting a slower speed on that road and designing that road with different lateral shifts or horizontal deflections, and sometimes vertical deflections like medians in the road to kind of slow traffic and give people the perception that they should be going slower. So right now we've identified target speeds for most of the roads on our roadway network and are looking to implement strategies to change people's driving speed to that target speed on those roads.
Well, it makes me feel better as a parent, certainly, that someone's looking out for it and that there is a plan for speeds. What other major projects, what other innovations are y'all passionate about?
So really great new technology we're using to be more proactive with pedestrian safety is video analytics. We can put up a camera and collect those close calls or near misses on the roadways to capture where people are crossing a mid-block and if they're getting into those almost crashes. Crash data can be particularly rare for pedestrians. Though they're a large portion of our fatalities, crashes for pedestrians only represent about 1% of our crash data. So we're dealing with a really small data set, and this near-miss data allows us to increase our sample size and make more data-driven decisions on where we should be putting crosswalks. So in our road safety audit process, or our safety assessments for corridors, we're now collecting that near-miss video footage to be more proactive in our analyses.
Connor, what about you? What sort of a passion project do you have right now?
So going back to the speed management plan a little bit, one of our big initiatives with that is what we're calling gateway treatments. So a lot of times, particularly out in rural Georgia, we'll have, you know, these rural highways that very quickly transition to these small town rural contexts. And, you know, oftentimes you'll see the speed limit will drop in those contexts, but there's nothing to indicate to drivers besides the speed limit signs that they need to slow down. This is a more, you know, urban context, even within a rural setting. So one of the things we're looking at as part of our speed management plan is how do we create gateways that show drivers without them even seeing the signs that they need to slow down. So we're considering things like roundabouts, medians.
You said my favorite word.
Are you a roundabout fan?
Oh, man. Y'all, every time on the podcast we talk about roundabouts, the guest gets a special prize. I don't know.
Dang it.
You get a special prize. No, I am very passionate about roundabouts. In fact, I encourage our guests to mention them every podcast, so I'll let you get back to it. But
yeah, I'll take my gold star.
But Connor gets a gold star
gold
for
circle,
roundabout.
Gold circle,
okay.
I guess.
So one of the aspects could be a roundabout. I love it. Go for it. What else?
So even simple things like landscaping can make a big difference in just, again, indicating that this is no longer a highway. This is a local or an urban street where you should slow down and expect pedestrians and activity.
Does this exist yet, or is there somewhere you could sort of give us as an example, or is this to come?
So it's largely to come. I think we do have some roundabout projects, for instance, in these more rural towns that,
love them.
Again, saying roundabouts.
Ooh, roundabouts. It gives me chills. That's going to be my legacy when I leave GDOT, is encouraging everyone to just jump for joy when they hear the word roundabout. So keep going.
Yes. So that's probably the best example we have right now are these roundabouts that we have at these settings where you're entering a small town.
So if I were to walk a day in your shoes, I'm dealing with speed. I'm dealing with pedestrian accommodations in a variety of landscapes, whether that's a major city in Georgia or whether that's in a community of 5,000. I'm dealing with pedestrians as it relates to school zones. I'm dealing with equity, with low-income neighborhoods and how pedestrian accommodations can change the vitality of that neighborhood, the needs. I'm dealing with needs from all different types of road users, all different types of systems. I could possibly get a roundabout thrown in there. That is a lot of stuff to consider. How do you do it?
So one of the key things we try to keep in mind is being data-driven. Data-driven planning, data-driven decision-making, whether it's what countermeasures we install, making sure they're backed up by scientifically proven crash reduction factors, or through data-driven practices to decide where we prioritize to put our projects. You know, that's removing the politics from it, because how can anyone really weigh one mayor's decision versus another?
Absolutely.
It's all about being data-driven as possible, taking those politics aside, and seeing how we can prioritize things based on all those various risk factors we talked about earlier, livability, need for active transportation facilities, and more.
Connor, how do you do it?
So I do think one thing that's important to point out, you know, aside from everything that we do here at GDOT, is that, you know, within traffic safety, we take what's called the safe system approach, which is this idea that in order to achieve a safe system, that, you know, there's many different components that go into it. So building safe roads, having safer vehicles, having safer drivers and pedestrians. So it's very much a collaborative effort, not just between us and the traffic safety office within GDOT, but with the public, with encouraging people to embrace safer practices, with even federal agencies like NHTSA, you know, developing safer vehicles. And to that effect, we actually have what's called the Vulnerable Roadway User Task Team here in Georgia, which is run by the Governor's Office of Highway Safety, where we actually do bring together all the different stakeholders in pedestrian and bicycle safety statewide to discuss and strategize and come up with different ways that we can make our roadways safer for pedestrians, whether it's us as engineers, public safety experts, you know, emergency responders, policymakers, et cetera.
Yeah, and in those task teams, you know, GDOT can't do everything alone, so it's about empowering all those local governments as well with the data and the resources that we do have to do projects on their own.
So where can I go to learn more? You know, we've learned a lot today, so thank you so much. But where can I go to learn more? I have a thirst for knowledge. I want to learn more about ped bike safety in Georgia. Where can I go? Send me somewhere. Where am I going to learn more about how to be involved?
Well, just Google Georgia DOT pedestrian and bicycle, and you'll come up with our webpage that we have our state bike routes listed there, as well as our vulnerable roadway user safety assessment, which talks about our various active transportation safety initiatives. And you'll hear all the types of works and projects that we're doing today.
Well, thank you so much both for being here today, empowering us with information that we need as road users, whether that's a motorist or a pedestrian, with the information we need to know more about the system, to become more active in the system, whether that's, you know, giving feedback as to what we need out of a system or to better use the system how it's meant to be used. So I know you will both, well, I'm confident y'all will both be back, Ron for round three, Connor for round two, if you'll have it. But thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Natalie. Yeah.
Thank you.
So whether you're listening to the podcast today from your vehicle as a motorist, or whether you've got your AirPods in and you're walking and you're a pedestrian or you're on a bike, there's so much more that we can learn about our system. There's so much more that we can do as users to make it safer. Today, talking about pedestrian safety, how can you make the road safer as a pedestrian, whether you're using the system as a motorist or using it as a pedestrian? How can we grow a safer system for all users? Great guest today. We hope you will join us for our next episode. More safety talk to come, more transportation talk to come. Of course, being ahead of the curve here at Georgia DOT. I'm Natalie Dale. Join us next time.